You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome to the Wake Up Tucson show. Christy Simone and Alexander, you're on 1030 The Voice. Local news and talk.
You got that. Plenty of it. It's the right place.
Remember, Central Arizona Block sponsors this hour of Wake Up Tucson, CabcoAZ.com. Of course, three locations, Wetmore, Valencia, and Sierra Vista.
If you're just joining us, as Chris would say,
yes,
you miss King Tut. But otherwise,
we learned that the guy who played sax on King Tut lives in Green Valley.
Yep.
And Dan Shearer did an interview with him or something. So we'll talk about that.
A show on Monday night or something like that.
So Allie Miller will be here in the third hour. Congressman Schweikert calling up a day early. I think he's got a big meeting with Nance tomorrow, so he's got to come in a little early.
Yes, it is.
And then we have, coming up in just about a minute, we have Eric Newsom, the book. It's basically called Make Noise, The Creator's Guide to Podcaster and Great Audio Storytelling. So, of course, he's a co-founder of Magnificent Noise, veteran of NPR and Audible, and he's produced several very successful podcasts. Welcome to Wake Up Tucson, Eric Newsom. Did I say that right?
You actually did. Congratulations and good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. Where are you calling in from today?
New York City. Honking horns in the background.
That's good. I like that. A little atmosphere, as we like to say. Eric, I'm trying to remember the number. How many podcasts are actually out there being somehow offered up to humanity?
Well, you know, if the number gets bigger.
Right.
850,000 podcasts are available today in 100 different languages around the world.
So as a guy who's done radio and I've done some work on some podcast stuff, we always have this discussion of finding your niche. Is that something that's an important part of this book you've written?
Yeah, I think that's kind of critical. All podcasts are niche podcasts, even ones that have millions of downloads. They're people who are interested in a certain subject or a point of view. And I think that, you know, radio over the years has always kind of been, you know, the way to talk to the masses and talk to large groups of people. And podcasting is really like not trying to do that, and instead is trying to talk to very specific people who share an interest or a hobby or a profession or something they care about that maybe not a lot of people in their town care about, but in the world there's enough of them to make an audience out of.
So if you have someone who has, you know, they have maybe 3 to 4 subjects that they're either interested in or mildly proficient in, right? And they want to do a podcast. Uh-huh. What is that? Does your book, or maybe you can offer a little bit of kind of what's the process? How would you figure out if whatever your idea is possibly fills a niche, excuse me, I always sound it the nice way, in the 850,000 podcast landscape?
Well, you know, if you're passionate about a subject or you have interest in the subject, there's going to be other people in the world who share that interest. And the idea is, do you have faith that there's enough of them to make an audience out of it? Can you reach them in order to let them know the podcast exists? And, you know, what I always tell people is, you know, when you're thinking about making a podcast, the first question to ask is, what is your message? What do you really want to say to people? Okay, you want to talk about classic cars. Great. You're interested in classic cars, but what do you want to say about them? What's your point of view and perspective? What are some of the things that you think? And when you think about that message, you also have to then think about who is this for? Who really is the audience for this? If I'm making a podcast about classic cars, am I making it for people who collect cars or who work on the mechanics of the cars or people who are just enthusiasts and don't own a car? You know, those are very different audiences. And I think that because podcasting allows you to talk very specifically to people, you really need to spend some time thinking about those questions and figuring out who you're talking to.
So there's a technical side of doing a podcast. Now, this the idea of actually kind of talking and how you present the information, right? Because like the people say when they come fill in me to do it for a radio show, right, when I'm on vacation right. or something, they said, man, that was a lot harder than I thought, because you're worrying about, you know, IDing, promoing, how do you present the stories. And I assume this has to apply to podcasting. What are some of the kind of mistakes you see some of the, you know, the novices doing on podcasts on that side of it?
Well, it depends. If you're talking about storytelling, I think really what people forget is they forget to not be boring, right? They think you need to really take a skeptical view of what a listener is going to be interested in. And there are so many things, both in podcasting and in the world, that are competing for their attention. How do you keep people's attention? Don't take them for granted, because, you know, with radio, in any given market, even a large market, you've got 20, 30 different radio stations they're competing against.
Right.
In podcasting, you have 850,000. Right? So the choices are endless. And if you are doing the classic car podcast, you know, there are other people doing classic car podcasts. So if you're not keeping people engaged, they have other things they can go listen to. So it's kind of important to kind of make sure that you do not take the listener for granted. And I think that's a really common mistake. And I think, you know, another thing, people don't ask some of these basic questions about, you know, what they're doing. I mean, like, what is your podcast really about? And you say, yeah, sure, I talk to people about classic cars, for example, but or beekeeping, or you talk to people about, you know, collecting Barbie dolls or whatever it is you love. But really, what makes you different than the other podcasts about beekeeping? And there are multiple ones and or these other subjects too. And it really, how you become distinct is really how you stand out in that field.
We're talking to Eric Newsom. The book is Creator's Guide to Podcasting and Great Audio Telling. It's Make Noise is what it's called. He's done work with NPR and Audible. Let's talk about how about passion? I feel like that's another thing. I've as a guy who has certain interests in podcasts, you get there and you feel like there's a regurgitation of information, but I feel like there's some passion move. You know, there's got to be some way to emotionally invest me in what they're talking about. How is that just something you're born with and that's life?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, it is. And people get passionate about all kinds of things. And you can't fake passion, right? Some people try. But, you know, the truth is, if you love a sports team or you really care about this issue in the world that you want to do a podcast about, immigration or education or various issues. I mean, I've seen podcasts about medical office design before, where people who really care about how medical offices are designed and they want to have long conversations about it, you know, great. How many people are there in Tucson who care about that? A couple. Not enough to make a radio show out of, but you can make a podcast because you can assemble all the people across the United States or all the people who speak English or around the world who care about medical office design. You can talk about the thing that you're passionate about. But if you don't care about medical office design, why would you listen to that? Why would you make it?
I kind of feel like the question I have is, so if you have a podcast that you feel it's in the right niche, it's you have that passion, you're a good storyteller, and you were going to upload it to two or three platforms for people to access, which would be your top three?
Well, you know, you don't have to choose, because when you use a podcast hosting service, they'll often they'll put you everywhere unless you tell them not to.
Gotcha.
And so if you want to be an Apple Podcast or Spotify, which are the number one and number two platforms, you have to have basically, just like when you host a website, you have someone who's going to host your podcast. And some places will do it for free, and some places will charge you a little bit of money, very little bit of money to do it. The amount of service you get is kind of proportional to what you pay. And they will let you say, yeah, I want to be on Google Podcasts, and I want to be in Spotify, and I want to be in Apple Podcasts, and I want to be in Stitcher and TuneIn and all these places you've never even heard of before, and they'll take care of getting you there without you having to worry about it. I mean, we really, in 2020, there are multiple apps and services that if you can figure out how to record a voice memo on your phone, you can become a podcaster.
Tell me about the future of this business. Where is it heading? Is there a, you know, kind of a contraction where they figure out and then it expands again? What's going on here?
I think it's going to constantly expanding and contrasting. I think that you do see little phases of podcasting. It's been going through, you know, podcasting's been around for 15 years now. It surprises people, but it's actually been quite a while. It's had a number of different ebbs and flows. I think that the real benefit for podcasting is it allows you to have subject matter is of interest to people regardless of geography, and that you can listen to on your schedule when you want to, kind of like with Netflix or sure. HBO or something like that. And there's always going to be a place for live radio. I don't see in our lifetime that being gone, but it's going to change. And podcasting will change too. And I think that for listeners, they just want to be able to find things that they love to listen to, regardless of what the source is. And the smart companies in the world and the smart talent in the world are just going to find ways to make sure they're a part of all that as the water ebbs and flows through the future. I think so. If there's anything that's going to be part of the future, it's change.
Sure.
And that there will be more opportunity for more people to participate in podcasting and perhaps make it a vocation. And people love to have things to listen to while they're commuting to work and while they are
sure.
mowing the lawn and folding laundry. And I think that there will always be a desire to have things to listen to that they enjoy, and that's going to just become easier and easier and easier.
All right, let me ask you one last question before the publicist runs us off. What is the most niche podcast you listen to?
The most niche podcast I listen to, this is bizarre, is there's a podcast from Australia about the history of escalators in Australia, a subject I don't care about at all. But, no, seriously, but the woman who makes it is so excited to talk about escalators that you just love listening to her be excited. You know, it's kind of like watching, you know, how you would watch Julia Child talk about food or someone else. Like, you know, it's like the same thing. This woman talks about escalators with such joy that it's just
I was going to say it was either my Talking Tunes with Rob Paulson or the Yes Music podcast, but you got me beat with your escalator thing. Nice going there, Eric. So, all right. Well, good luck with the book, man. Good luck with the book. It's important because so many people have so many questions. So I think it's the right time for the right book.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. That's Eric Newsom. Make Noise, Creator's Guide to Podcasting at all fine booksellers, as we like to say. When we come back, TPD says goodbye to two other officers going to another department. And it's up on Facebook, and it's kind of sad to watch. So, just like Joe Ferguson, they're jumping ship. 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. Remember, the name of the book is called Make Noise, A Creator's Guide to Podcasting. The spell Eric Newsom, NUZUM, if you want to look it up.
And it's the kind of the book you got to read it now, because if you read it at the end of the year, it's
the whole game's going to change.
Yeah, the game's going to change. You know that. But if you read it now, quick, do it, and then get on with it, and then keep up with it.
Now, Schweikert's going to call up after CBS Bloomberg, but two things we're going to cover. I got to go through some crime statistics that Cantone compiled comparing Tucson,
this.
Chicago, and the rest of the U.S. But someone posted this on my Facebook page. This is from the Hillsborough Police Department in Oregon. And it says, say hello to the city of Hillsborough's two newest police officers, Diana Jaquez and Kevin Mesh. They join us as lateral transfers from the Tucson Police Department. Diana is a graduate of the University of Arizona, and Kevin's a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. They both look like they're in their late 20s. And they blew out of here at the same time for Hillsborough, Oregon. So, remember that Allie Miller's coming up in the third hour. I just put it up on Facebook, this story about Local First coming to Green Valley that we talked about with Dan Shearer. And it's interesting because I've always enjoyed my conversations with Kimber Lanning from Local First. It says in the article by Mr. Sinovich, that's the reporter for Dan Shearer, I want to get his name out there, that there's 3,200 members of this Local First Arizona. Now, I have seen that, of course. We've seen it in the restaurant, Tucson Originals, the Roccos, the El Charros, you know, all of these people that we've had on the show over the years. that they get it, and I feel like the local food scene of Tucson gets it. Right, even though there's still too many of you eating at Chili's and other adult McDonald's places. Okay. But do we really see that there's a good portion of Tucson, Pima County, Oral Valley who kind of understand the shop first, try to shop local first? I kind of see it maybe in that, you know, parts of down, you know, that 4th Avenue area. And then, of course, local government doesn't get it. Right, I mean, I can't find a more unfriendly to local business than the city of Tucson. And if you ask, you know, Rahina or any of the electeds and say, "Hey, what do you think about the local first areas?" Oh, it's wonderful.
I'm so
forward. We need to keep that tax dollars and the money local. But are we actually doing what we're supposed to do to support the local businesses to, you know, make money for them and make money for the city because we're a sale? This whole thing about the people that should be jumping on this are people that are the city of Tucson over the years, because again, they're a sales tax dependent government. They don't have the Chuck credit card of your property taxes and how we can manipulate property values and you know, the assessments, right? So if you guys see something that I'm not getting, that this, I would give you the city of Tucson's rating from 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, if they really believed in Kimber Lanning's local first gospel, I think it'd have to be about a 3 or 4. Because the roads in front of your businesses are crap. You're not safe in the city. I got people running around public parks with makeshift weapons. Right? You get charged when your alarm goes off. I mean, you guys tell me. 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. Schweikert and then Cantone breaks down Tucson crime against Chicago crime. Put your helmet on, kids. You're on Wake Up Tucson.
He's a wild and crazy guy, Chris DeSimone.
Wow, what an intro.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. It's a No Joe Jazz Wednesday. Layla, if you can call back after my conversation with the congressman, that would be awesome. She wants to talk about local first. 790-2040, Congressman David Schweikert. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Now, was that a blast back to the 80s or 70s? You know, the wild and crazy thing.
All right, so what happened was Dan Shearer, the editor of the Green Valley News, is on. He mentioned that the guy who's a saxophonist, played the sax on King Tut by Steve Martin, lives down in Green Valley.
Look, you want to know the amusing? Some things are forever. The joy of having a four-year-old daughter. We actually did the little King Tut thing the other day.
See?
There you go. See?
Good deal.
It goes through generations, David.
And trying to get a little girl to do that funny arm movement is, it's just adorable.
Tell me about the what's going on in the rolling impeachment of the president of the United States. We're sending stuff. We're only going to send one. What's Nance up to?
Oh, who cares?
I know you say that, but
no. Seriously, at a certain point, the theater of impeachment has sort of imploded, and the left just gets so excited. So, there might be something else. Please, oh, dear God, please. Well, we don't believe in God, but, oh, dear, please let there. So my understanding is we're going to have a vote in a few hours because we have to have a vote for the managers, which are basically the prosecutors that you send over to the Senate. And now what that package will look like, will they send both articles? I assume they will. They did not get much of what they wanted, but they did spend a month raising money off of it. So, you know, the House members got that.
Well, that sounds like an exciting time with Nance. Let's talk about, I'm checking a couple of your things on your social media. Let's talk about the, we killed this Soleimani guy in Iran, but this brought up the discussion of the War Powers Act. Where are we at here?
Okay. You have a lot of moving parts. First off, the Democrats sort of overplayed their hand last week. There's a number of us who actually have great concerns on the design of the War Powers Act. You know, the original War Powers Act goes back to World War II. Even back then, there were certain questions of it was designed constitutionally. Remember, the Congress is to make war, but yet in a modern military world, you need to be able to allow the president to react at certain moments. So last week, basically as a, forgive my language, a screw you, Mr. President, the Democrats decided finally, we're going to finally do a War Powers, except this one isn't going to be a real one. It's going to be basically a postcard from the House.
Right.
It's not going to be sent to the president. It's not going to have the, you know, the value of law. It's not going to become the law of the land. It's basically a postcard. And the interesting thing, a lot of the conservatives, we went to the Democrats and say, if you'll take this seriously, if you'll do what we have been working with Democrats for years now on a real live constitutional War Powers Act, we'll work with you here, even though the timing is really crappy, because you're obviously doing it because the president had a success. Democrats were much more interested in their postcard than they were actually doing legislation that was good for protecting the Constitution.
I just want to make a point here on how the press covers stuff, right? So your hometown newspaper, not the Fountain Hills Independent, but the Arizona Republic, right? When they did a journalism article about this, it's just a resolution, right? It just says Congress votes to limit war powers of Trump. And you're like, no, it didn't.
No, no. and there's, but the, look, we have a lot of people writing stories today. They may be very smart, but they're writing way outside their specialty because there's so few reporters left. Any first-year intern on Capitol Hill would understand these things are just propaganda pieces that we do and not meant for actual policy. And I was shocked how many of sort of the reporters and even some of the social media in Arizona didn't seem to understand something. And that's not subtle. That's just blatant.
I was looking at your jobs reports. We're talking about 3.5% unemployment rate, 50-year low stays strong, 6.7% joblessness rate, U6 data, lowest level on record.
Back up.
Yes.
The U6, you and I, during the Obama administration, during the Trump administration, we have repeatedly gone back and talked about U6 and real unemployment. And the number of times that that real unemployment number was what we call sticky. It's we would see, hey, there's 200,000 jobs or 100,000 jobs, but the real unemployment, the people that were discouraged workers, are marginally attached, all these other definitions we use, and that number was frozen. And something has happened since really about late last summer till now, where all of a sudden we're seeing large numbers who were not looking for work coming into the labor force. So when you see that, hey, real unemployment is now down to what, 6.5?
6.7.
Or 6.7. That's actually, that's one of those, if you geek out on these numbers, that's the one it should make you just spend the rest of your day with a smile on. Because that's actually a really big deal. It means people who sort of had mentally quit or their skill sets had fallen behind somehow now are being absorbed back into the workforce. That's a big deal. That's the one that those of us who work on this fixate on. And it happened.
You know, another number, we were up the, when we used to talk about these job numbers in the Obama years, we always talked about job participation rate, mm-hmm. right? Where are those numbers tumbling the less?
Labor force participation.
That's, yeah, sorry.
Okay, and here's for anyone that wants to, you know, talk about these numbers, because I did a little tit for tat event a couple months ago with a Democrat buddy of mine. He's a friend, and it was interesting. The room was almost all Democrats, and they kept throwing out these labor force participation rates 10 years ago were this, and you realize the room didn't understand the basic mechanisms that 10 years ago we were also 10 years younger,
right?
Baby boomers were still in the top of their prime working years. labor force participation is obviously the portion of the society that's population that's working. But now you have to look at it saying, how many are under 18? How many are over 65?
Sure.
How many are in disability-type payment situations and have stepped out of the workforce? How many have chosen? How many have early retired? But that labor force participation, the argument is you can't grow as an economy if you don't have the two key levers. One is capital. You know, they call capital stock, money that can be lent. Well, we're doing great there. It's people. We actually have a real problem. Remember, birth rates have been crashing for decades. We've been below replacement rate as a society, as a country, since 1971. Now it's just getting worse. So why all of a sudden have we been able to break through numbers that we didn't think people would enter the labor force? And we're seeing some fun things and some disturbing things. Older Americans are choosing to keep working or come back into work.
Sure.
That's wonderful. We need that. We still have a problem with millennial males. They're just underperforming in the economy, in the labor force. And so we're even having a meeting, and as soon as I hang up, talking about, are there any things we could do incentive-wise to continue to encourage? Because millennial females started to explode into the labor force about a year ago. And you do realize this conversation is now bored. Everyone is listening.
Don't care. It's good meat. Good meat. Now, here's a question for you. So we keep talking about how we need to bring in, you talked about the birth rates crashing. We've talked about the idea of bringing people in from other countries through H-1B-1s, you know, talented workers.
Yeah, but you got to find a real appropriate balance. Your first goal has to be, what can you do as a country? And all the industrialized world is facing this right now. How do you encourage family formation? We have data that says half of the majority, slightly more than half of millennials, will never get married. But that doesn't mean they're not in long-term committed relationships.
Ed would tell you a bottle of cold duck and the right music.
Well, but this is actually serious because it has real... it has real effects on your retirement, on the economic stability of the country going out 50 years. These things are a big deal. And so family formation, how do you get the tax code right? How do you get the regulatory code right? Those things that at least make family formation healthy. And no country, even in Hungary, where I think when you have your fourth kid, they buy you a house. and they barely move the needle. Then we have to have the really, and this is the great battle for the next couple decades, is the fight for smart people. Most other countries are changing their immigration systems, or have, to basically encourage immigration, but encourage immigration of those who sort of maximize economic velocity. So, you know, we take in 1 million some people every year. Most of it's familial relationships. Is our immigration system. We still probably need that 1 million, but should we start to dial that so it's more of a talent-based immigration system, and therefore it maximizes economic expansion?
Sounds like a cold, heartless capitalist right there.
Whoa,
no,
daddy.
Actually, in some ways it has a certain elegance because you don't care about someone's gender, their religion, who they cuddle with. What you care about almost solely on that type of system, and Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, that's what they've been doing for years, is what do you bring to our society?
Gotcha.
And instead of, hey, you're part of this special carve-out group, or you are blessed to have family that can do this type of sponsorship, in many ways, it's much more egalitarian. It's actually much more fair.
Well, David, thanks for the knowledge, as always. I know you think we bored people, but they really do appreciate the actual good meat of what we talk about. So keep doing what you're doing, buddy.
No, it's nice to the amusing thing. Like I did a half an hour on the floor last night on Medicare and medical disruption.
I watched it a little bit this morning. You were rocking.
Yeah. And the only call we had was from someone from New York. So sometimes you wonder, is anyone out there? Does anyone care? It's like, who watched the president's rally and who watched the Democrat debate last night. I'm very curious what the ratings were. So, hey, you all have a good time, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, David. Take care, buddy. All right, we come back. Layla, if you want to call back on the Local First Arizona, love to hear from you. And then we got Allie Miller coming up in the next hour. And then we have I'm going to try to get this Cantone story about Tucson crime, Chicago crime on a per capita basis comparison, which are, let's just say, as Leonard Nimoy would say in Star Trek, fascinating, Captain. Wake up, Tucson.
You know, you guys didn't talk about Bloomberg and all that he's going to do for my health system. Oh, I see.
Won't have time for it today. Probably tomorrow we'll go through the most latest Sharon Bronson campaign finance report. One of my favorite things to do in the world.
Whose was it with yesterday?
Rhonda Pena.
Oh, that was all the Don Diamond and developer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That was all that.
She's there's so much diamond money in her campaign, they should open up an office at the Diamond Ventures building for her. All right, let's get to Cantone. Craig Cantone came on our radar. He's lived here for about 2 years. He's lived everywhere, St. Louis, Jersey. He's kind of a libertarian activist is what I'd call him. He's written for the Wall Street Journal before. He really does his homework, and he writes too much. And if he doesn't, I guess he drives his wife crazy. So she'll say, Craig, go in your corner and go write a 1,000-word column, and then you can come back and we can go clean up the – and, of course, he talks about how he lives in the foothills of Pima County and how crappy it looks. Garbage, roads.
And how they clean up the roads almost every day.
Illegal signs. You know, and this is the highfalutin area where people are going to Lowe's for, you know, from around the world. So here we go. Dear independent thinker, you know about her. You no doubt have heard about the horrible crime rate in Chicago, especially the high rate of murders. But you may not know how the city of Tucson compares to Chicago in crime rates. So I developed a table comparing the crime rate of Tucson to Chicago's. Now this is a line that he says you gotta, so Tucson is, listen to this line. This is a great Cantone line. Tucson is cursed with a mayor and city council that put a higher priority on political symbolism instead of protecting citizens. As when the new mayor on her first day on the job passed a resolution condemning the Trump border policy. Okay. So here's, now we're going to do kind of like math on the air here. So we got to know this. So per 100,000 population, okay, this is important to know. This is, let's see what we got here from Cantone here. So Ms. Miller's here, and she's in the green room. So Ed Alexander, check this out. You're going to love this. Crimes per 100,000 population, okay? Nationally, it's 2,500. So there's 2,500 crimes across the country per 100,000.
Per 100,000.
All right. Chicago is 4,100 crimes per 100,000.
It's a lot.
Okay. Tucson is 5,691 per 100,000.
Okay.
So we have in Tucson, according to Cantone's numbers here, we are doing 1,500 more crimes per 100,000 population than Chicago.
Huh.
Now, they're killing us on murder. How's that for a line?
As it were.
Right?
Yes.
So the murder rate per 100,000 nationally is 5. Chicago's at 20.
Yeah.
We're at 8.7.
Okay.
Okay. So we're bigger. We're, of course, better than national average, but we are not Chicago. Now, here's some things that we really are. You want to be leaders at? These are things not to be leaders at. And everything I've ever talked about with police staffing and how we do things around here are borne out in a lot of these numbers. Let's go to rape. Okay?
Okay.
Per 100,000 U.S. citizens, 42 rapes.
Okay.
Chicago, 66 rapes.
Up.
Tucson, 93 rapes.
What?
So we're almost 40% more higher on rapes per 100,000 than Chicago. Okay.
I'm not saying anything. Let it sink in. Go ahead.
Robbery.
Yeah.
Country, 86. Chicago, 111 per 100,000. Tucson, 227.
Off the chart.
We're double the robbery per capita than Chicago.
Did the the police chief tell you this?
Hell no.
Oh.
Then we have, we do not beat, Chicago beats us on assaults. Country 246 per 100,000. Chicago's 563. They're more than double. We're at 406, though.
We're getting there. We're working on it.
Yeah, we're moving on.
Man, no, we got one every two or three a day.
Violent crime, we still don't beat Chicago. They're 1,000. Okay? The country is at 381 per 100,000. These are violent crimes.
Mm-hmm.
We're 737. So we are almost double the violent crime rate of the rest of the country.
It's not safe walking in this town anymore, basically,
so
what you're saying.
We also beat Chicago on burglaries. 606 to 429. We beat them on thefts, 3,800 thefts per 100,000. Okay, the national average for theft is 1,594. We're 3,870. We beat both Chicago and the country on vehicle theft. The country's at 228 per 100,000, Ed. Tucson's 477. We are more than double the average rate for vehicle theft. And then property crime. The country is at 2,200. Chicago's at 3,100.
Mm.
Property crime.
Not good.
We are just a tickle under 5,000.
Jeez. It's lawless in this town.
I'm just telling you, man.
These are numbers. These are crime numbers. These are not let's pie in the sky stuff.
So so Chicago only beats us on murder and assault, but on rapes or anything else, and especially property crime, we are the kings.
It is scary, and it's not safe. It's unsafe in Tucson anymore.
You're on Wake Up Tucson on 10:30 The Voice. If you miss anything, you want to share something that maybe you heard with friends or family or, you know, maybe your kid's baseball team, KVOI.com. You can go to DeSimoneHQ.com, which is your gateway, as we like to say, your gateway drug to all of our YouTubes, podcasts, and other silly things, and the best local restaurants in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
So,
are you going to put those numbers anywhere, Mr. Cantoni's letter?
Absolutely. Okay. Very, very soon.
Will that be up on your Facebook?
It'll be on Facebook. And if you want me to forward you his email, email us at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com.
Crazy stuff.
Supervisor Miller coming up next.